What's up, guys? Welcome to Juice Podcast. My name is Saul Monnelly at Saul Monnelly NBA on Twitter. Here joined by Forrest Walker at Do Nots on Twitter. How you doing, Forrest?
Hey, we're doing a daytime record. How about that?
Yeah, daytime recording. I still have to put this damn light on because this room is dark as hell. But I can see you, Forrest. Your room is very well lit. Your hair looks luxurious.
Thank you. Yeah. Hey, daylight does wonders.
Yeah. So we are ready to go. So it's January 20th, which means January 15th has passed, which means it's only appropriate that we do a trade deadline preview today. I had a written up version of this discussion kind of on RedNationsNews.com if you guys want to go check that out. But before we get into the deadline, let me ask you this, Forrest. Does it matter to you that the Rockets have kind of been sliding as a team since, like, Christmas?
It matters to me. I don't know if it matters to everyone else. And I want to, after we discuss this, I want to ask kind of a follow-up question of that. It's a good question. It is a little worrying because, you know, they start out the gates pretty hot. Well, all right. They stumbled immediately out of the gates. They lost three games in a row. But then they look good after that. And they've been looking for a while. And a lot of people were waiting for the other shoe to drop. And they're like, well, I guess it's not going to. Because it's been like, you know, 30 games and the shoe hasn't dropped. The shoe's dropping now, it seems like. And Definitely part of that is due to missing Tari Eason for quite a while. And missing Dylan Brooks until pretty recently. And then Dylan Brooks coming back and not looking like the same guy as he was before. Largely because he's not hitting all of his threes like he was before.
Right.
And the concern to me is, like, all right, if this is just Tari being missing and them playing against good teams, which are both happening, like, they're playing against teams like the Sixers and the Celtics and stuff, who are, they're going to beat you. They're good. But to some degree, is this them regressing to the mean? Like, their defense looked really good when nobody was hitting shots against them. But then three-pointers started to fall. There was a run of five games, which I think ended with not this last game, but like a couple games before that, where opposing teams over five games shot 44.5% from three against them. Which, like, all right, that's not going to happen every game. You know, even like leaving guys totally open, you're not going to give up 44.5% from three every game. But they had really good luck from opposing three-pointers in the early part of the season. So which one is more close to their expected value? Is it the early part of the season where they looked really good defensively, or is it this part of the season where they look really bad defensively? So I think it's important to try to measure that, to see, like, when the going gets tough, when the chips are down, how good actually are they? How good actually is their defense, like, once they have to start going up against, like, real teams, and also in the middle of the season, the sloggy time when that early season, like, good vibes and excitement is starting to wear off, and now it's just your day job. So I'm a little concerned. I don't like watching it because it's less fun. They're having less fun. I'm having less fun. But I don't know. I think these are. I think there are some concerns, and I think Ime Udoka has to start earning his money now.
No, I think it is fair to question how real that those first 30 games. I think those first 25 to 30 games were, right. I think it's fair to question that, especially since we were questioning that in the moment, right? So it's not like these are unfounded concerns. We were talking about the shooting luck they were having. We were talking about kind of the shooting luck they were having offensively going their way, frankly. You know, how real was, you know, Dylan Brooks hitting a million threes? How real was Jae'Sean Tate hitting a million threes, right? Like, there was a lot of stuff going their way. I guess the question I have is, like, so what was the expectation for them preseason, and what have they achieved that? Have they, you know, still surpassed that? Like, what was their goal? What was an appropriate goal going for them going into the season? Because I had them pegged as like a 35-win team, right? And I go on ESPN's BPI, which is like their projection model, and they have it pegged at 37-45. That's where they have the Rockets pegged to finish. Not the best projection model. 538 used to have a better one, but 538's gone now. So we have to go with ESPN's BPI. But they still project the Rockets to, you know, win about 37-45 games. That's still above where I had them. Yeah. Right. What about you? Did you think? What was your goal and expectation for them this season?
All right. So as far as expectation goes, we can look at it from a few different angles. We can look at what you and I wanted from them, which you're talking about. We can look at what the team wanted from themselves, and we can look at what the public expected from them.
Right.
The easiest one to figure out is what the public expect. You can just look at the over-under lines from Vegas, and that pretty much tells the story of what people in general think they're going to do. That was, what, 31.5, 20, 29? I think it varied between 29.5 and 31. I think it ended up at 31.5. So they're on pace to win 32 games easily. But, you know, it would be very surprising if they hit that under. They still could, but it'd be really bad. Like, things would have to get really bad for over, like, literally half the season, them to only win, what, like, 11 more games or whatever? Oof.
And all of them are home games, probably.
Right? Yeah, presumably.
Because they never win road games anymore.
No. No. Yeah. They had a little bit where they could win road games, and a little bit where they could win Eastern Conference games. That's over.
Yeah.
The other thing is, the one that's hardest to figure out is what does the team want from themselves, because they can say stuff about it, but you don't really know, you know, like, unless you are, like, one of the Fertittas, or, like, Ime Udoka, you don't really know what the real expectations are, and it's gonna disagree inside the team, so, I don't know. The team probably, I would guess that overall they want to make the play-in at a bare minimum. Like, that's, I think, I'd have to assume that's, like, especially with their hot start, they've got to feel like they have to make the play-in, or it's been a disappointment for them at this point, which I more or less agree with. My expectation going into the season was I didn't have any idea what they were going to be. I thought they were, I didn't think they're going to make this as big of a leap as they did previously, but then they looked a lot better than this. So it's been kind of a roller coaster ride. Where in this moment, like 2 months ago, I'd have been like, yeah, as long as they, like, win 30 games, I'm honestly pretty happy. Now, if they win 30 games, I'm pretty disappointed. So, you know, what a difference a couple months make. I think they have enough talent that they should be able to put this together a little bit more. But I do think they are facing a problem that actually the league is pretty even. There's a large amount of teams who are, like, all kind of okay. Right, and that's the difficulty they're facing, is that there's only a few teams that are, like, bad. There's, like, 4 in the East and, like, 3 in the West that are just, like, these are teams you should expect to beat anytime you play them, unless you're one of them. And so that means that most of the games they play are pretty challenging. So I'm not super upset about most of these games. It's just the ones where they look particularly bad. Like, weirdly, the game against the Timberwolves was pretty bad, because they did look like they kind of given up in that game. And losing the Timberwolves is no shame at all. Timberwolves are excellent this season. That is a title contender team. You should not expect to beat them if you're the Rockets, but you should expect to, like, not lose that badly. And the team against the Pistons was worrying. I mean, given the Pistons had to have a lot of things go right for them to lose a game by 2 points against, like, a 500-ish team, but those things did go right for them, and that's a problem. So I do feel like the Rockets are in a slump right now. I don't know whether it's because they're getting exposed to who they really are. I don't know if it's because they're in bad luck on opposing shooting. I don't know if it's because they just are, like, in bad vibes and just don't have the juice right now. I think we need to see what happens after they, like, get a win or two under their belts, which, I mean, hopefully will happen pretty soon, right? You gotta expect a win at some point, but they've gone from, like, a few games over 500 to a couple games under 500 in a fairly short span of time, and that's... There was a minute where they looked like they had a real chance to take the division, and now that's obviously not going to happen. Like, they were a couple games behind the teams leading their division, like, not that long ago, and now they're... That's over.
Yeah. A couple things. They are underperforming their point differential, which means they've had some bad clutch luck, right? Which, you know, for a young team, actually, you do kind of expect some bad clutch luck, right?
Yeah, it's not that surprising.
Right. And Fred VanVleet was kind of carrying the load there for a minute, but now it seems like they're playing like a young team in close games, right? But I will say this. Even if I agree with you that I had adjusted my expectation to where play-in tournament equals success, right? That's kind of where I was at too. I don't think they should do anything rash if they miss the play-in tournament, because the Western Conference is kind of correcting itself in, like, a pretty drastic way. Like, the teams that were bad in the beginning of the season are really making a push. Like, the Clippers, for example, are, like, fourth in the Western Conference after they were, like, 12th or whatever, right? The Pelicans are a serious team again. The Mavericks have climbed the standings again. The Jazz, after they had a surprising year last year, it's like, oh, it seems like they're going back to normal. No. This is their normal. They're a good team,
yeah.
Right? They're like a competitive team, right? So all the teams that like were expected to be better than them, but that they had surprisingly surpassed, are going back to where they should be in the conference. Now, I guess, you know, what do you do now if you're Houston? Well, what you can do now is you just try and compete the best you can and try to get that play-in tournament. I worry that they do something rash if they don't get there. Because, again, I think generally the organization, they've had misses, right? Like, the front office has had misses. Don't get me wrong. They've made mistakes. My worry is that if we deem this a failure, the front office will overreact in the offseason and heads will roll. And I don't think this is a heads will roll kind of season, right? Like, I don't think if they miss the play-in tournament, Rafael Stone should lose his job.
Right? Yeah, I think like anything 35 wins and up is not a problem for them, actually.
Right. No, but you and I agree with that, right? Like, yeah, we're being rational. Sometimes ownership isn't always so rational, right? Especially once they've gotten a taste of the good life, right? In the beginning of this season.
All right. And this is a question I wanted to ask you, which is a great time to do it. Do you think... All right, it's a two-part question. Do you think the Rockets should do something to try to make the playoffs? Like, do you think it's worth trying to make the playoffs this season at the trade deadline? And do you think they will? Like, should and will, both.
I think they should do something to improve their team because they have this Oladipo's expiring salary just sitting there. And if they don't do anything, it's just going to go away. So I think it actually might be prudent for them to make a win-now move because of finances, right? Because they've been for months preparing to be a mid-level exception team this summer. And if that contract expires on them, they're not going to be that. So I think there's a way where they can make a win now trade that actually serves their long term objectives.
And the good news for them is, well, so first off, we should establish that what everyone's talking about makes sense, which is Landale's nothing. I'm sorry, Jock, but you're not working out. Victor Oladipo is nothing on purpose. And then a lot of people have been like wish casting Jayshon Tate into that trade package, which for reasons that are only becoming more sensible as time goes on, honestly. So you can put together a pretty good salary with those guys, right? You could get back a pretty decent return, like salary wise. And then the very good news for them currently is that the Brooklyn Nets have been falling back to earth, kind of where it made sense for them to be the whole time. That Brooklyn pick is getting sweeter and sweeter by the minute. And hopefully that continues on for Houston, because the better that Brooklyn pick is, the better a trade package they can put together and the better of a player they can get in return without having to give up like some of their high level with some of their like recent draft pick prospects. My other question for you is,
okay, go ahead. Yeah.
What would it take for you to be willing to put one of those big six into a trade package this summer or this winter?
This leads into my next trade deadline question. Let's talk about the trade deadline. Like, we've talked about this now. Here we go. Okay. Are you at the point where you're exploring Jalen Green trades if you're Houston? Because we've been talking about this now, right? And now I feel like we're safely at the point where there's like two players on the roster that probably deserve a starting spot over him, right? In Tari Eason and Cam Whitmore, right? But you have to balance that, Houston, like without being rash, without making a trade just to make a trade. So are you at the point where you're having talks? And if you're having talks, how serious are those talks?
All right. I wouldn't say he's on the block. Like, I don't think I'm advertising him. But if people call about him, I'm listening. Like, right. I want to know what his trade value is right now. Because for a good enough offer, I'd do it. I don't think that offer's on the table is a thing. Like, I don't think anything is out there that's going to be worth it for them. Like, I think if he is going to get moved, it'll be this this off season or later.
Can I ask you then? Like, so what is something that is worth it for you?
I think not just a starter quality like two guard, but like a sharpshooter who has real promise and potentially could be an all-star. So we're talking like a Bridges type or something like that, or better than that.
I'm even a step higher than that. I'm like Donovan Mitchell, right? Like if it's just Bridges, like that's boring. I feel like I can get Bridges without putting in Green, right? Like I feel like with the amount of Nets capital that they have enough carrot to get Bridges away if they really wanted to get Bridges, right? Because the Nets get that incentive to tank, get their control back, and then they get that sweet lottery pick, right? And then next year's lottery pick or whatever, right? Like, there are ways to get Bridges if you want Bridges, but if you want to throw in Green, that's where I'm like, okay, then you're not getting the lottery pick, right? Yeah. Like, you know, like, you don't get both, right? I think Green is firmly, like, on the level of that lottery pick in terms of value.
Yeah, and I think you're right, and I do think that right now, the problem is that he's playing real bad right now, right? You'd actually kind of want him to play better for a while and then raise his value, because right now if you're Houston, you're like, well, he's at the lowest value he's got. Like, he's playing a little better lately, right? And if he keeps it up, this might actually ironically make him more likely to get traded because it raises his value to other players or to other teams. Because, yeah, when he's at his bottom of his, like, look, when he looks terrible is not when you want to trade him, because you're not going to get good value for him. What you want on that kind of trade is for you to have seen this guy for years and to go, okay, I know this guy isn't going to meet my expectations. We figured that out with our internal metrics, but other people don't have those metrics and they think he might work out still. That's the kind of, like, that's the dynamic you want to trade this kind of player. You don't want it to be that everyone thinks he is not going to meet his expectations, because then you're just going to get, you know, you're not going to be able to train him for that much. I don't know. For that reason, I do think it's very unlikely to get traded. Like you said, someone of Donovan Mitchell's caliber would have to be like that, like an all-star caliber, or at least like nearly all-star level player has to be out there, I think, for this move to make sense. If it's anything less than that, like, you might as well just let him play out the rest of the season at the minimum and see if he can, you know, get back into shape.
And I don't, for what it's worth, I don't even think they would entertain anything less than all-star. Right? Like, I think they're at that point, like, where they're not being rash about this, right? But I do think, as you said earlier, they're picking up the phone, right?
Yeah,
I do think that, yeah, for sure. Because how can you not, right? He hasn't done anything to be untouchable. There's only one guy in this roster that has done something to be untouchable, right? Here's where I'm at. Like, you have a few different goals here at the trade deadline, right? I think you have to move the Oladipo salary. That's a hot potato. Right, yeah. You have to get something back that is long term salary. I think another thing is, like, you want to kind of explore that, like, moving Jock Landale's dead salary, right? Like, I think I'd move his dead salary, because that's just wasted. You know, every day you wait, you don't do that. It's just, you know, dead money. I think Houston might have the stomach to hold on to him, but, like, if you're already trading Oladipo, you might as well combine the salary and get someone meaty. Right.
Yeah, get a more expensive player back in return.
Right. And then you got the Jayshon Tate thing.
Yeah, I don't know. Right. I mean, I guess Chuck Landale's presumably a negative asset right now, right? Like, I'm trying to think through, like, is he a negative or positive asset, or, like, neutral?
I think he's, like, a neutral asset. Yeah because you can kind of clear your books, you know?
Yeah, I mean, he definitely doesn't add anything. So, you know, adding him on there is basically just, like, trying to make salaries match.
Yeah, if he was a good player, he'd be a positive asset. Because he's a bad player, he's a neutral asset, right? Yeah. Because that contract is just so nothing, right? It's just so for the years going forward. For now, it's not nothing. You got to eat that, but for the years going forward, it's nothing.
I think that Oladipo is like a conditional positive asset, depending on what kind of trade you're doing. Because he's not playing, he's not really doing anything, but he's expiring this year. So if a team wants to get some cap space this summer, if they want to move long term money and make some room, then he's a positive asset a little bit. But
I mean, the same thing with obviously, Rondale, right?
Yeah,
like they're like the same. I kind of think they're like the same.
So obviously, the deal with a trade would be that you're trying to you're trying to leverage your draft assets in order to pick up someone. And, you know, they have pretty good draft assets right now. My question to you would be, what is the most valuable asset or player that you would include in a trade this trade deadline? Assuming that you're getting back, like, a reasonable return, not like, you know, a star unexpectedly is coming to you.
Okay. That lottery pick.
The 2024 Brooklyn?
Yeah, but it'd have to be a starter. Right, I'd have to get a starter back, but yeah, I'm willing to entertain that lottery pick, especially because you have the salaries to go get a real starter. Right, if you're telling me I can go get Jeremy Grant, for example, right? Like, I like Jeremy Grant a lot. Like, I like the idea of him on this team, and he would achieve like all three of your objectives. He'd make you better. He would be a long-term salary on the books. You possibly trade at some point. And you can also kind of... You have an excuse to bench Jalen, to be honest. Right? You get a starter back. You can bench Jalen and be like, hey, listen. This guy's just this guy's a veteran that's better than you. He's a veteran that's... No longer Tari Eason or Cam Whitmore, like a 20 or 21-year-old. This is a veteran that is better than you. Sit on the bench, Jalen. Right?
Yeah, that's true. That... The optics are a big deal for that. And I think we talked about it before, but it can't be overstated enough how much the Jalen Green situation is really being run by the optics of it. That you have to have a sufficient reason to bench him, or else you just really can't do it this season.
Yeah,
next season, different story. But this season, no. You have to do something like that. You have to get like a proven veteran who it's not shameful for him to be sat in front of.
And frankly, like, I'm at the point where like he has to have like a good next couple of games, like a really good next couple of games for me to continue starting him. Just because that, again, like we talked about this, like that noise coming from behind is loud. And it becomes damaging when you're not giving other guys reps that are just more deserving, right? I'm writing an article right now on Jalen, and this is kind of sidetracked, but we'll get back to the trade deadline really quick. I know you got a hard out at 3:45. So I'm writing an article right now on Jalen where I think his main competition right now is not Cam Whitmore. I think his main competition right now is Amen Thompson for the starting point guard spot in this team long term. I don't think this player archetype can work as a shooting guard. I just don't. As a wing. I just don't. I think you have to be better defensively. I think you have to be a more efficient scorer if you're not better defensively. I think this kind of player, if you're going to be this, you have to be a ball handler. Right, you have to be a lead ball handler. If you're not going to be like crazy efficient or crazy good defensively, like I just think that's where I'm at with Jalen. Like, if I were the organization, I'd put him at backup point guard within the next couple games if the trends continue the way they are. Right, so that's kind of my thinking going into the trade deadline, Jalen wise.
Yeah. Well, and that's very forward thinking too, because if Amen can be your point guard going forward, like you need to have the plan for who's next after Fred VanVleet. Fred VanVleet is not forever. He's not on the same timeline as these other guys. He is a transitional figure. So yeah, if you can get Amen these reps, get him learning from Fred while he's out there, like create your successor now. And Amen's looking pretty good. Like he's looking real good for a rookie. Amen and Cam being as good as they are has been a real monkey wrench in Jalen Green's plans, whatever they might be. So you're not wrong. I mean, that is... Yeah, he has three guys breathing down his neck, all who look like have very good reasons to be the starter in his position. And he's really just not... He's been a little better lately, but he's not showing enough right now. I mean, maybe he needs more time. Maybe he does need more time to like let the game come to him. But I don't think they have the Rockets. If they were bad this season, it'd be different. But they're not. They're not bad enough, except for him.
No, I feel you. So, have you thought of some guys that you would consider trading for at the deadline?
Huh. See, the thing is, I don't know who's going to be available at the deadline, so I don't know who I want.
So, can I throw some names out there? The two names that I like the most, that Houston's shown interest in one of these guys already, And this seems fairly realistic. It's like a pragmatic kind of move. I would keep my eye on John Collins and Malcolm Brogdon. I feel like those are guys that are pragmatic moves. They solve a lot of your issues, right? I think backup center is like kind of a blah concern. I don't think it's really that big a concern when I watch the Rockets. I know a lot of people are panicking about this. I don't think the Rockets are like starving for a backup center. They have a lot of bigs, right? They can make
I mean,
they
it'd
can
be
make
nice, do. But yeah.
they can make do. I think they're fine. And Collins can play backup center, right? And he provides you shooting, right? And like it's like a 2-in-1 kind of scenario. With Brogdon, he solves kind of more the needs that I see for this team, which is like I think they need another guard, another combo guard, another playmaker, another guy who can defend off the bench, another guy who can shoot for you off the bench, just another ball handler who can shoot. Like that to me is a bigger concern than a big.
No, the shooting is atrocious currently. They badly need as much shooting as they can get. They don't take enough threes. They don't hit enough threes. They'd be much farther ahead in the standings right now if they had, like, a normal amount of shooting for an NBA team in 2024.
Right, yeah. And like, you know, these guys help you. And you could also start Brogdon in a pinch, right? You could take that. So you could take it one step further and be like, hey, Jalen, Brogdon's going to take your spot, right? Which is less sellable than, like, Jeremy Grant. But it's still sellable, I think. Right.
Yeah, he's still been around.
Yeah, and he's still better than him. Right. Like.
Yeah. critically.
Yeah. Yeah. Other guys I would look at. You know, obviously Harrison Barnes came up as a name recently, as an actual name that the Rockets are fishing around for. Mark Stein reported this about us on his newsletter. Huh. You know, the thing with this is like you kind of have to be a third team. I don't see a 1-for-1 trade coming up. I think this is a kind of player you trade if you're help facilitating the Kings getting somebody. And if that's the case, I'm more than willing to go up front. I've explored the idea of Houston coming in as a third team for like the Lakers trying to get like DeJounte Murray or the Kings trying to get a big name fish of their own, like just coming in as like the facilitator, right? If you can get like Austin Reeves from the Lakers or if you can get Harrison Barnes from the Kings, if you just help grease the wheels in a direction, a certain direction, I think that's a smart way of doing this too, you know?
Well, and you can get good value on your return that way too. Mm-hmm. So that's not bad. I mean, the Rockets right now are still in a position where they want to, like, increase their asset stock, as it were. Like, they do need to be ready for when a big trade becomes available, which it's easy to think, like, oh, we found the guys. He's going to be the guys. Probably not. Probably they're going to need to have like a blockbuster trade between now and potential contention to get there. So yeah, something where you're instead of spending assets to be better right now, if you can pick up a somewhat usable guy, like you said, like an Austin Reeves or something, and be that facilitator team, you'll pay a lot less because you're doing a service for them outside of the actual trade itself, so you can get better value, so you can like stock up your war chest a bit.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. You know, there's also guys that I think aren't being talked about enough, like Colin Sexton. Like, I think he could possibly be had from the Jazz. And I think he's an upgrade over, frankly, the minutes you're getting from Aaron Holiday and Amen Thompson, to be frank. Like, Amen, you know, he has shown flashes. I still think someone like Sexton would be better. I like the idea of Houston trying to trade for, like, a DeAndre Hunter from the Hawks. If the Hawks are going full sell mode. Like I'd like to go sneak that in, right? But I'm not sure how willing the Hawks are to go trade DeAndre Hunter. Like these are the names that I would look for. I would look for starter or fringe starter type players that can shoot the ball. Like that's a prerequisite. You have to be able to shoot the ball and you have to be able to start in a pinch.
Is Aaron Holiday the most enjoyable and likable player that they should probably move?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I'm not a big Aaron Holiday fan, to be honest. Like, I think
he's fun,
not,
but
he likes to score the ball, definitely.
Good. Yeah. He was shooting really hot earlier, and that was cool, but now he's, like, normal, and it's not so cool.
Now he's, like, waving off, like, Alper and Şengün. It's like, all right, man, this was fun earlier. Now it's like...
You gotta hit all of them if you're gonna do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so these are the kind of names that I would explore at the deadline. I think Houston at the deadline should look for a way to, you know, obviously combine all these salaries, Lonsdale, Oladipo, Jayshon Tate. I think Jayshon
Holiday or someone. Yeah.
And trading Tate allows you to move guys up in the rotation too, right? When guys get healthy, yeah. Right? Like, I think Cam Whitmore, you don't want to be in a position where he's going to be back in the G League. I think he's just too good for that, right? I think if you trade Tate, I think he's a positive asset. I think a team, you can get something real, or you can make the price of something like cheaper, right? If you throw in Tate. Yeah. I think he would help a lot of teams on contenders. Right? So yeah.
He's a plus player. He's just not the plus player that they want for going forward.
Right. Yeah, it's just he's at a position that's just hard to justify giving minutes to right now. But yeah, that's kind of what I've been thinking about for the trade deadline. I know you got a heart out, so I will let you go, Forrest. I do appreciate you doing this for me.
Oh, it's been a delight. I love coming on. I love talking Rockets, especially this year when they are not just kind of a lost cause with nothing to say about. So there are discussions to have. I'm happy to have them with you.
Yeah, for sure. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, YouTube. Subscribe to us on YouTube. Give us a thumbs up. It helps helps other people find the show. Look at that thumbs up. There yeah, it is. Yeah, yeah, yeah. see, even Squadcast knows what's going on. And make sure to give us a written review on iTunes because it helps other people find the show. All right, guys. Have a good night.